everybody within the sound of my voice. You're all invited. Draft Party, Big Storm Brewery, Clearwater, 49th Street, little south of Ulmerton. Be there.
Iris talking about April 29th, Thursday night, opening night of the NFL Draft. It's our big party, big annual event that we've been talking about for a long time. More details coming at joebucksfan.com. But Big Storm is the host. Clearwater, 3,000 square foot covered outdoor area, great viewing, great listening. And there's their beautiful indoor tap room, their A-plus menu. Everything's going to kick off about 7 o'clock. You come when you want, but we got a lot of fun stuff planned. Draft starts at 8, and the Bucks are probably going to be picking around midnight, so it's going to be a late night unless they trade up. Who knows? But it's always a great time. Big Storm is Florida's best craft beer, and they are the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast.
Smarten up and call Bill Curry, Board General Manager Sean Sullivan. You won't be sorry. Whatever you want, he's got it. Whatever you want to pay, he's got it. Sean Sullivan, BillCurryFord.com.
Quick disclaimer here. It's not whatever you want to pay, but you will get an amazing deal at BillCurryFord.com. And GM Sean Sullivan is dying to help you personally to navigate you through everything that you might want to know about buying a vehicle at Bill Curry Ford. Buccaneers fans, April is here, and the sage of Tampa Bay sports, he's no fool. He's driving around in a cherry red Ford Escape from Bill Curry Ford. That man is Ira Kaufman. You know all his nicknames. The hell with them tonight, Ira. This is a hell of a day. It's been a hell of a month in Buccaneers land. All sorts of stuff going on. There's no way we're going to be able to get to everything here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's very first family of Ford, presents the podcast. Ira, I got a whole mammoth list of things to run past you. We've got two podcasts coming this week, of course. How are you?
I'm exhausted, gentlemen. I'm exhausted. Why? Because I had the grand idea of my wife and I going to Lowry Park Zoo with another couple. We planned this thing for a week and a half. It's $42 to get in the damn place. We paid it. You know, it's 89 degrees, DeKemper. If I wait two more days, you know, it's 74. But no, I go today, 89 freaking degrees. There ain't no shade to be found. Even the elephants weren't coming out, Lee. They were looking for shade. I found a tiger. I petted a stingray. I stepped on some lemur crap, and I got the hell out of there. And by the way, if you want a pizza pie at the African Expedition restaurant, it's $27 for a pizza pie. Gentlemen, I'm exhausted.
And I just, for whatever reason, I can't picture anyone going to a zoo over the age of 25 unless they've got kids or grandkids. I don't know what to say.
I was getting a little senile. He thought he was going to Mons Venus, and turned out he was in the wrong place. You know,
I saw a pygmy hippo that might have a future as a Buccaneer tight end if O.J. Howard doesn't work out in a couple of years. Never know.
Ira, the best part about a hot day at the zoo is that if your deodorant fails, nobody knows any better. They just think it's the kangaroo, you know? All right, listen, Sage, Bill Curry Ford, a new month is here. Soon all the new offers will be rolling out. But every single day you get their A-plus service from GM Sean Sullivan, who's dying to help you personally. They've got a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. They are donating so much more to the community. They already were donating a lot. They're ramping it up with the Curry Cares. You can follow them on Facebook to see all of their fantastic things that they do in the community and ways that you can donate. But BillCurryFord.com, that's where you start shopping for a cherry red Ford Escape like you have, for an F-150 like Lee's got. I've got a Bill Curry Ford used vehicle, which also has a nationwide lifetime warranty on it. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, a little bit of excitement going on, and I'm saying it from this angle because Bruce Arians spoke since we last did the podcast, and Arians talked about being eager, and this is the time is now, to draft a developmental quarterback and get him in here to learn. And this is exciting. This is a bit of a shift. Now, immediately following last year's third day of the draft, rounds 4 through 7, Arians said there were quarterbacks the Bucs, quote, had there on their board, but they all got jumped on early, and they didn't get to draft a quarterback. But this year, he sounded even more enthusiastic about going to get one. Who knows? Third round, fourth round, fifth round. But exciting stuff. And what do you think of that?
Well, Bits, I hate to piss on your enthusiasm, but I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. I've done a little research, gentlemen. Lee, you're not the only one that does a little research. And 5 years in Arizona, 2 years in Tampa, and I understand he's the head coach and, you know, not the general manager. But in those 7 years, a Bruce Arians-led football team has drafted one quarterback. And I think the guy came out of Virginia Tech. He was a fourth or fifth rounder. And they made him a tight end after a couple of years. He couldn't play. And so anyway, Steve, I'm not buying the premise. You know, Arians doesn't want to say absolutely not. He doesn't want to say that. Now, could they take a guy in the sixth round? Yeah, they could. But, Lee, as far as rounds 1, 2, and 3, I would be absolutely shocked because I still think the overriding driving force is, and, Lee, you've said it many times in the last few weeks, who's going to help us in 2021? Who can help us on special teams? Who can help us if a guy gets hurt and step in? Who can help us this fall? And we end up lifting up the Lombardi Trophy. That's all that's going on over there at One Buck Place, Lee.
Well, it's interesting you would say that because Arians talked about they need speed on defense, which is basically special teams. And right about the same time he said that, we learned Ryan Smith, who was their gunner on punt and kick returns, and
that's
pretty
right.
good at that too,
right.
he signed with the Los Angeles Chargers. So that was very interesting. But you know what, Ira? I don't disagree with what you're saying. I don't. You know, Arians' history is he doesn't draft quarterbacks. He's been so adamant in the past, anti-quarterbacks. But here's another fact. Right now, as we speak, the Bucs only have one quarterback on the roster, unless you're counting John Franklin. Let's not get carried away then. Both Gabbert and Ryan Griffin are unsigned free agents.
Fair point, Lee, but I don't see anybody lining up for Blaine Gabbert. I don't see it. I assume he'll be back, but Steve, that's an interesting point. Steve, he's not under contract at the moment.
My guess is that he'll be under contract by the draft just because, hey, Blaine, nobody wants you to sign here. Otherwise, we're going to draft somebody. I'm with you, Ira. I understand what you're saying. We can agree to disagree. I think still think it's the perfect time. I know you do, too, in a lot of ways. But I don't think it's a bunch of smoke. But we're going to find out in about 4 short weeks, which is exciting as hell. And, you know, speed on defense, losing Ryan Smith, the star, the absolute star, the legend, the most iconic member of the Buccaneers 2016 NFL draft. There he goes. We'll miss him, and we will miss that draft class.
Please, Jason Light, please, not Sam Allinger. Please.
I understand. Steve, we joke about Ryan Smith a little bit, but he's going to be in this league for 10 years, and he's good at what he does, which is special teams. And, Lee, he's going to have a nice 10-year career because of it.
I can't help but think of this when I think of Ryan Smith, and that's not a knock on Ryan Smith at all. He could be the poster child of previous coaching staffs who could not develop young talent. How can we forget Ryan Smith first comes here? Oh, you know, good young cornerback and, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, small school corner, big time talent. And he's with the Bucs for just, what, a few weeks? Oh, he's a safety. So Mike Smith gets the, you know, this brainstorm. Let's make him a safety. And then he tries to turn him into a safety. And before you know it, he's back at corner. So you had a young player, basically a rookie. He had his head screwed with. His head was spinning. He didn't know what was going on. I don't know if he ever would have made anything, but I think that is exhibit A of the previous coaching staff could not develop young talent. You know, thank goodness the Bucs got hold of Ronald Jones just in time to save them. But
you know, that's an interesting point. And Steve, I don't think we can talk too much about this coaching staff as a collective unit. They did a fantastic job. I mean, what can you say? Joel Glazer talked about it today. I asked him about it in terms of developing young players. He mentioned blending in the veterans and how nobody panicked and it was one for all. And Steve, he wasn't going to knock Dirk Cutter's coaching staff. He wasn't going to knock Lovie Smith's coaching staff. This is the best staff since, Marinelli, the Tomlins of the world, and Monty Kiffin. And, you know, that's a long time ago, Steve. This is the best staff since then.
Definitely. And you mentioned Joel Glazer. Now, one of the Buccaneers co-chairmen, one of the owners, today did 16 minutes or so, a Zoom call with local media types. And it was sort of a makeup for the owner's meeting that was missed this year, where Glazer usually sits down for about 15, 16, 20 minutes privately, one-on-one with various media and talks for quite a while, when you add up all the time. So today was his annual thing. And last year, of course, it was missed. And of course, he didn't talk after the Super Bowl. So finally got a shot at him. And I want you to translate Glazer for me here, Ira. I want you to play the new game, pulsating across Tampa, translate Joel Glazer. I asked him a question about, and he made a face afterwards. If you go back to the Zoom, he made a little bit of a face for about a second and a half. I asked him where he thinks they've improved as an ownership group over the last few years. I kind of boxed him in there. And he said in that answer that patience was a big part of this. He said that you see some of that patience. He said, quote, see threads of that in our Super Bowl team, and patience led to a component of the victory. So I'm going to ask you, Ira, what is he talking about when he says patience was part of the victory, part of what ownership learned?
All right, Steve, I'm now going to play the translate Joel Glazer game, and I'm going to go before Lee DeKemper, and I'm interested in what Lee's analysis is, but I'll tell you mine, Steve. I can only think of one name. That name is Jason Light.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Light. Patience. What is the patience? He could have easily been thrown overboard with Dirk Cutter at the end of the 2018 season. Back-to-back 5-11s. Terrible 5-year accumulative record. The draft picks looked bad. Can't find a kicker. Stop me when I make a mistake here, DeKemper. Stop me. And I call for Light to get thrown overboard. And the next thing you know, here comes Arians. And a year later, here comes Brady. They're all interconnected, Lee. Arians doesn't come without Light. Brady doesn't come without Arians. And next thing you know, Glazer's lifting the Vince Lombardi trophy. Lee, when he said the word patience, and I know what Steve's talking about, I was thinking about Jason Light. What were you thinking about?
I thought the same thing. And I'll just take the baton from you, and I'll run with this saying, I think he meant patience was he knew that Lovie Smith had the final say when Lovie was here. Lovie hired Jason Light. Lovie didn't want Revis. Lovie didn't want Donald Penn. We can go on and on. Just some of the most asinine personnel moves I've ever seen. Lovie wanted Josh McCown. You know, I'm starting to talk like Adam Schein here. and the Glazers knew this. And so if you boil it down, Light only had one hire, and that was Cutter. And if you really want to boil that down even further, the NFL doesn't like changing coaches on rookie quarterbacks. That's usually a death knell for them. Cutter was the offensive coordinator, and so they knew they had to get rid of Lovie, but they didn't want to because the track record of firing a coach with a rookie quarterback is terrible for the quarterback. And so they figured, Cutter did a nice job with Jameis. He could have been rookie of the year. Let's keep Cutter around. And so if you think about it, Jason only had one hire. And yes, that's called everybody and their brother. If Jason would have got launched along with Cutter, no one, maybe not even Jason Light, would have blinked an eye in the sense that look at the record, look at the results. Results were awful. But the Glazers, with patience, like, hey, he's only had one shot at hiring a coach. And I wouldn't be surprised if Light told the Glazers middle of the season in 2018, I might have a chance of getting Bruce Arians. We don't know that, but I'm speculating that that happened. And so I'm thinking that's why it was patient. Jason Light, yes, but it was more than Jason Light. It was like, okay, Jason's only had one coaching hire, and that one coaching hire we kind of boxed ourselves into because we didn't want to ruin an investment with Jameis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Steve, what'd you think about it when he was saying stressing patience?
I agree with the Jason Light angle, except I'm also going to go with the Jameis Winston angle. Not every ownership group would see a young quarterback, their franchise quarterback, who they liked. You know, they know he wasn't perfect, and they went through a lot with him. But we know the Glazers liked Jameis, and that was addressed today. And we knew that before today.
Personally.
Correct.
Yep.
But as far as patience, not every ownership group, Ira, you know this, would have sat back and said, you know what, we're going to let a quarterback that we kind of like, we're not going to re-sign him. We're going to go sniff around in free agency, and we'll get back to Jameis later if we don't find what we want. That's being patient. When you're willing to sniff around the quarterback market with a win-now coach, not really 100% sure if you're going to get Tom Brady or what's out there, and I think that's part of it. I think they stayed very patient and found their guy, but I do think it was more Jason Light, and it's also some of the whole approach overall that he talked about with developing players. You know, they were patient with Ronald Jones. Some teams right. would have, but they did get him competition. But there are other guys there, patience with Donovan Smith, when not everybody would have re-signed him. Remember when Arians came in and re-signed him for big money, as soon that was one of their first moves that they made to give Smith his second contract. So there's a lot there, but I'm going to throw Jameis in the mix just a little bit.
Makes sense. You know, Lee, we saw Joel Glazer on that Zoom call from his house or his office. And
hey, Ira, can I say this? Not one piece of Bucks memorabilia in the background. Hey, Joel, can you get a pennant or something or a poster or maybe a little bobblehead or something? What the hell was that? Put on a Bucks shirt.
Yeah, I got to be fair. This is right after the owner. Well, that's right. They didn't gather. It was a Zoom owner's meeting. Look, it could have been his library for all we know. But, yeah, there's no Bucks memorabilia.
That's right. You're right, Steve. I got more than he got in the background.
You know, I got a baseball cap. A Bucks baseball cap.
And this shouldn't surprise anybody, guys. But he looked very contented, gentlemen. He looked like a Cheshire cat who's, you know, got 22 starters back and is probably the odds-on favorite or one of them to win the whole thing in L.A., you know, in 2022. And he's just so happy how it all turned out. And how could he not be? Lee, how could he not be after all the misery? You know, Lee, I asked him about Brady specifically. What did he learn about Brady, seeing him up close? And you know what, Lee, I don't know how much interaction Joel Glazer had with Tom Brady this year. I really don't. He doesn't live in Tampa. Now he goes to the games, all of them, home and away. I understand that. But I don't know how much interaction he's had. But anyway, Lee, he said that he has never seen anybody work harder than Tom Brady. Now, Jameis Winston is a hell of a worker.
Which, by the way, Arians pointed out on Collinsworth podcast. He said that Jameis, his words, not mine, absolutely works his tail off.
It really struck me when Glazer said that, Ira, about Brady, because Glazer was around all of those Buccaneers of the glory days, right? That was his team. So they were younger. Joel Glazer was living in Tampa and on site at that time, if I'm correct, pretty sure.
That's correct.
And so he was around the Lynches, the Brookses, the Barbers, the Legends. He seemed very adamant that Tom Brady's like nobody he's ever seen in his life, which, you know, in the football life, a team Glazer is 26, 27 years.
Can I point out something that just so people don't jump to a conclusion about Glazer? You know, Ira and I were just talking about, you know, Glazer, he probably did didn't see Brady a lot. I'm sure he got reports all the time that he probably didn't see him a lot. Let's be fair here. You know, people hear that and they automatically think, oh, he's an absentee owner. No, remember, the virus is going around. And there were protocols. Remember, Arian's wife, and Arian's never met Tom Brady until after the Super Bowl. Jason White, first time he met Giselle was after the Super Bowl because of protocols. Pretty much everybody and their brother had to stay away. And I'm assuming since, you know, the Glazer family.
It came out when they first laid out all the protocols. There was actually a waiver for owners, that owners were basically allowed full and complete access. That's why they were on the field before games. And they, yeah, they were owners. They were the only ones who got a waiver. Nobody else got any kind of waiver. All right, Ira, time for a little quiz. You know how I love to quiz you on all kinds of different things. Tonight, it's pretty simple. When you shoot home and you're going under the sink to get Cosmo's biscuits and you find a leak and it's moldy already, where do you go immediately?
FloridasEliteRestoration.com.
Very good, Sage. Very good. I thought you were going to give out the name, not just the website. Florida's Elite Restoration, they are Tampa Bay's premier disaster company. If you have mold, water, fire issue, whatever it might be, that's who you call immediately for a free assessment of what's happening in your home. They are mold remediation specialists. They're licensed. They're not just a mold guy. And they will work with you and your insurance company to make sure you don't get ripped off, to make sure everything gets done right. And they work with some of the finest plumbing contractors and air conditioning repair people and property managers across the Tampa Bay area. If you're in that business, call Josh Martin at Florida's Elite Restoration. We know him personally. Tell him Ira sent you, and you're looking to see how they operate and what they can do for you. You're going to be very, very excited and surprised. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Make them your first call. Put it in your favorites if you have any problem in your home.
Florida'sElitereStoration.com.
Ira, you are feisty with the website name tonight. Feisty.
Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Guys, at this stage of this podcast, let us take 30 seconds in acknowledgement of, I would call him an icon, Ted Webb.
Yeah.
Ted Webb passed away, and for people that didn't know Ted Webb, or they only knew him from 970 doing news and stuff, he had a show, Lee, in the late 80s, early 90s, called Sports Rap, and it was on Sunday nights at 11 in the Tampa market. You know, heavy focus on the Bucks, but, you know, other sports too, and I was a frequent guest. Roy used to be on with Bruce Lowett. I was on with Pat Zier, Gary Shelton, other people. I just wanted to do a tip of the hat to Ted Webb. He was one of a kind. Steve, I don't know if you ever ran into the guy. He was quite a character on the Tampa Bay sports scene a while back.
I met him before I lived here. When I was working for MLB.com, the Rays had their expansion draft. They had a big function at Lau Wang Stadium. And FLA, I didn't know anything about FLA at the time, but FLA was doing a live remote at this expansion draft at Al Wang Stadium. And the first time I met Ted Webb, how can I say this in a cleaned up way? We were next to each other in a men's room. And that's when we first met. He was he introduced himself to me. We just got talking. You know, I'd never met him before, obviously. He never met me. Great guy, just a great guy. We talked for about 10 minutes, and he was just a fantastic guy. And listening to him on 970, when he did sports, that was before my time. However, listening to him, I used to listen to him regularly for about a year and a half on 970. He was Tampa Bay through and through. He was Tampa Bay. If you had to pick one person who represented Tampa Bay the best, whether it be culturally, whether it be, you know, where to go eat, where to go party, who to know, yep. This. He yep. was Mr. Tampa Bay.
He was heavy into wrestling. Steve, I got a quick story. Steve, you got to indulge me. Believe me, it's worth it. I'm going to take a minute and tell a quick story. I was a guest on Sports Rap many times on Sunday night. And I was working for UPI until 1990 when I joined the Tribune. So I'm on there with a guy named Pat Zier. Pat Zier used to work for the Lakeland Ledger. Long-haired guy, skinny guy. He was a runner. He covered the Bucks a lot, and he used to do auto sports. You know, Daytona 500. He was heavily into it. So you go into the green room. The show would start at 11. You go to the green room at 10:30. And, you know, he lets you do an opening statement for about a minute. So he wants to know what topics you're going to hit. So Pat Zier said he was going to talk about, you know, college basketball. And I was going to talk about Lou Piniella was managing the Reds, and the Reds had a hell of a team, like 1990.
And Lou Piniella from Tampa.
Yeah, so I said I'm going to do something on Piniella and the Reds. Okay. Steve, 11 o'clock, the lights go on, and Ted Webb turns to Pat Zier. Pat, your opening statement. Zier says his thing, and he goes, Mr. Kaufman, what do you have to say? And I looked at Pat Zier, and it was an accident on a track somewhere in Talladega, whatever, that day, and somebody got killed. And I turned to Pat Zier and I said, Pat, how much more blood must be spilled on NASCAR tracks before they shut down this barbaric sport?
Oh.
That's what I said to him. I double-crossed Pat Zier just to get a reaction out of him. Ted Webb thought it was fantastic. Zier got out of his chair. I thought he was going to choke me. He couldn't believe what I said.
He got out of his chair?
He got out of his chair. And, you know, he got his earpiece. His earpiece fell off. I mean, it was hysterical. Steve, I set the whole thing up just to get a reaction out of Pat Zier. And live television. It was a live show.
Can I, and I know that's a, you know, this is a Ted Webb tribute. Can I spin this back to the Bucks real quick?
Sure.
Anyway, wasn't Pat Zier the guy who asked John McKay the infamous question, can you talk about the execution of your quarterback?
It could have been Pat Zier. Yeah.
And of course, McKay answered, "I'm all for it.
I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of it." Yeah. Steve, what other podcasts are you going to find stuff like that? Where are you gonna find
none. Zero.
Live television, baby. Sage, one thing that came out this week from Bruce Arians, in emphatic tones, in excited terms, O.J. Howard. They are expecting him back for training camp. They're expecting him fully in the mix. That's the one-liner from Arians, back in the mix. And Arians praised Howard for his four games that he played last year and what he accomplished. And we know that Tom Brady liked him early on. If we remember that far back, he was calling him Juice. And they seem to have a little bit of a connection beginning. And Cameron Brate was completely buried on the bench. But here comes O.J. Howard back, Ira, for another season. They're going to roll with these three tight ends again. The rich get richer. Your thoughts on that?
All right, couple of quick things before I turn it over to Mr. D. One, that could be an area where this offense is even better than 2020. That's legitimate if O.J. Howard is healthy. Number two, he was pretty productive with Brady before he got hurt. He was. And number three, maybe most importantly, Lee, they got to make a decision about O.J. Howard by the end of the 2021 season. They got to know whether to cut bait with him, let him go, contract up, UFA, let him hit the market, or say that he's going to be our guy going forward. Gronk's doesn't have too many years left, and we're going with O.J. Howard. So, Lee, I think it's legitimate. I don't think Arians is blowing smoke in this regard.
No, but there was so much speculation there. It was ridiculous. And I'm going to go Gary Shelton. Gary Shelton, I think his pet peeve in writing is when a guy has to go under the knife and he has surgery, and then the next day, it was successful surgery. Gary Stead drove Gary Shelton nuts. Number one, how do you know? The guy he's still in the hospital.
He's still alive. He's still alive, Lee. He's alive.
And that's number two. Because number two, if it wasn't successful, he'd be making funeral plans. Come on. So Arians, we don't expect any setback. No shit.
Steve, do you think Howard can gain Brady's trust if he stays healthy?
Come on, Ira. If he catches the ball, he trusts him. If he doesn't catch it, doesn't trust him. You know, I mean, what do you want me to say? If Brady thinks Brate is going to catch the ball better, then he's going to say, you know, use Brate in these nine packages instead of OJ. So
I'm in the burning bush category with OJ Howard. I'm not anti OJ Howard at all, but a blown Achilles is not a minor injury.
No.
I'm suspicious he's going to be as good as he was last year, only because of the nature of the injury. I hope for his sake he comes back 120% and he's better. I hope. But it seems like a lot of people are forgetting. You know, Steve and I got on Twitter the other night, and it was a very nice Twitter. The guy was asking about O.J. Howard, and he said, you know, they're going to get him back, and it's going to be that much more of a productive offense. This guy was killing it with Brady. I'm like, let's not forget what kind of injury he had. It's not like he had an ingrown toenail, and this is a major injury, especially for a guy who depends on his wheels.
Steve, the one thing we can say with certainty about Howard is he's got to answer all the questions this year, otherwise – they're going to move on without him.
Absolutely. He's got to stay healthy. But, you know, we can't even begin to start thinking about 2022 yet, Ira. O.J. Howard's coming back. It's just crazy times. Everybody's coming back from all angles. And and if they somehow nail the draft again, which, you know, of course, April's the month where we're going to get more into the draft. But if they somehow nail that, man, this could be, I hate to say it, Ira, because it sounds silly. I don't like to sound silly. I try to be the voice of reason on this podcast. But Ira, in all seriousness, and I know you're seated right now in your cherry red Ford Escape from Bill Curry Ford, this could be, if the Bucks nail this draft, this could be the best team in NFL history. What do you have to say to that, Ira?
Ooh, wow. Wow. I thought you were going to say the best team in the NFL. I certainly wouldn't argue with that, but that is a hell of a statement. But at the same time, Lee, and we have to acknowledge this. We do. It all hinges on keeping Brady healthy. I mean, it all does.
Sure.
And you're talking about a 44-year-old quarterback. So, Lee, in purely those terms, and I hate to put it like this, it's a little crass, it's precarious. At the same time they got all this talent at all these positions, it's precarious because your quarterback's 44.
For a minute, let's forget about age. Let's just think talent here. Talent-wise, was this team as good as, let's say, the 76 Cowboys, which lost to the Steelers in one of those classic Super Bowls? I think it was Super Bowl 10.
One way you can look at it, maybe, how many Hall of Famers are on this team? I mean, obviously, Brady,
two,
Gronkowski.
Sure.
Yeah, possibly Sue, possibly.
It would be a stretch, wouldn't it?
That'd be a stretch, and, you know, White's too young in his career, and the O-line, I'm not going there.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, is that you can't go there yet because the careers haven't played out. You know, we have the benefit of looking back at these old teams of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and we know who all the Hall of Famers are. We don't know yet. Nobody knew on the 2002 Bucks that Rondé Barber was a Hall of Famer. He still had 10 years to go.
Ira, the road they took to the Super Bowl, that is something you would expect from those classic teams 30, 40 years ago. You know, the Niners or the Cowboys. I don't know about the Steelers. The Steelers were so loaded. But you know what I'm talking about. That was, you know, a playoffs for the ages. I don't think Steve's completely nuts here. I don't know about all-time team. I don't know about that. You know, you talk about Packers who had like a dozen guys in the Hall of Fame, or the Steelers I just mentioned, or even the Niners with Montana and Rice and all those guys, Ronnie Lott. But, you know, this is a top 10 team. I don't think I'm nuts saying that. I don't think Steve's that crazy.
Well, here's the thing.
Top 10 team of all time. I think so.
Here's the thing, Ira. Here's the thing. When you look back at those teams that Lee referenced, the old Niners, old Packers, some of those guys, and it's just the reality, they made the Hall of Fame because, yes, they were great players, but they also had the benefit of playing on an incredible team and were part of a dynasty, and a lot of those guys were going to get in. If you just look at the talent on this team next year, potentially, when you look at Wirfs and, you know, Brady, Gronkowski, and Mike Evans, and even just say the pure talent of a Leonard Fournette, who is an incredible talent. Imagine if Brown comes back across the defensive line. We know what's there. It's the best linebacker tandem in the game. You know, who knows, you know, who might eventually emerge in the secondary. And you start looking at the team at every position. They've got a superstar or a potential superstar. It could go down in the books if they draft a couple of guys who maybe steal a job here or there because they're so damn good. It could be one of those teams. I don't know. I'm just trying to savor the moment, Ira.
I understand, Steve. And it's my job to keep you on planet Earth, Isbits. And here's the way I'm going to do it. And I think this is legit, guys. Tremendous postseason run. Tremendous. However, and you guys got to weigh in, and I know you will. May I suggest, gentlemen, if Winfield does not strip the ball from Jared Cook, the Bucks are likely to lose that game. They are likely to lose that game.
You say that about a lot of teams. You could come up with – I know what you're saying, Ira. I know what you're saying. You know, 49ers barely beat the Cowboys. That went the game that you covered. The 81 NFC Championship. That happened to all kinds of good teams. I know what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. They were one fumble away, one punched out ball away from possibly losing. And you're not wrong. But I think you could say that about a lot of teams. We could probably come up with 10, maybe a dozen Super Bowl teams who we think were dominant that were like one play away in a playoff game from losing.
Fair enough.
I mean, where's Bill Parcells if Scott Norwood makes the kick? You know, I mean, what are you talking about?
To Steve's point,
Sage, you know how this goes. If the referees don't screw up that call on Kellen Winslow, the 2010 Bucks get into the playoffs, and Raheem Morris is still coach. It's his 13th year, and they're winning the Super Bowl.
Well, to your point, Steve, I will say this. And we're all in agreement. By the end of the season, they were the best team in football. And as I look towards the 2021 draft, Lee, you've heard me say it, for the first time in Buck history, including the 03 season coming off that Super Bowl, they don't have a glaring need going into the draft. No. Unless you talk place in Ryan Smith. I mean, come on. So, I mean, I'm special teams, you know, but in Arian's mind, it's important, and I'm not knocking it, but it's not a glaring need. And if you're ever going to take the best available player, this is the damn year to do it.
All right, Sage, now look, playoff Lenny, Lombardi Lenny, whatever you want to call him, and not Lenny's, the deli in Palm Harbor where you stuff your face and eat free cheesecake, Ira. Playoff Lenny,
they got a hell of a strudel. They got a great strudel down there.
Playoff Lenny, he did his thing with the media. And one thing that he talked about, Ira, he said that Antonio Brown really inspired him. You know, they talked about how being with the Bucks is their version of last chance you, and they can't mess up. And Brown told him you have to look at it like that. God doesn't give you too many chances and all this stuff. And he said his conversations with Antonio Brown carried me a long way throughout the season. We talked about it every day, helped him out, and helped him with the emotional side of the game. Now, it all sounds very nice, but it's very interesting when you start to think about, wait a minute, Antonio Brown wasn't there for the first half of the season. So are we to believe that Leonard Fournette was just sitting there kind of in a cloud of sadness and not really himself and still sad about the Jaguars cutting him 2 months later? And, we do know that he was benched and after the bye week, and something went on there, and obviously it worked and it turned him around. But very interesting stuff from Fournette.
You know, Lee, if I would have told you 6 months ago that we would have somebody describing Antonio Brown as, a freaking psychiatrist and an emotional counselor, we would have been laughed off the podcast areas. Nobody would have picked this up. What is true is Fournette was clearly pretty upset with his role and lack of opportunity at a certain point in the season. There's no question about it. And Arians didn't make any bones about it during the year. He didn't.
Didn't he say Fournette went to him and asked for a release?
He might have said that.
I know he said Fournette came to him and he was depressed, not depressed, but he was upset at his role. And he told him, Arians told him, look, you know, your time's coming. This is a good team. I think we got a chance to go somewhere. Your time's coming. Just hang with us.
Yeah. Steve, I don't want to be too cynical here, because we don't like to be on this podcast, but he also said, you know, that could have went somewhere else and made more money and this and that, but he wanted to come back to good old Tampa and let's run this thing back. And let's be realistic here. Lee, if he could have made considerably more money with another franchise, he'd be gone.
I agree.
He'd be gone. I think he's doing the smart thing, because if he has a good year, he'll cash in when the salary cap goes up markedly next year, and he'll cash in. But he didn't have that chance this year, Lee. He just did.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. And I think we tend to forget this. Arians did not promise Fournette a starting job when he was signed. I remember, you know, Arians still used him, but I don't know why. I don't know if it was an ulterior motive that Arians was almost talking him down when he was signed.
I think it was more Arians, because Arians is so much about his guys and his coaches and everybody knows everybody, that I think that was more he didn't know Fournette yet at all, really. But I do agree with you that he didn't promise him anything. And today, Ira, it was made very clear, actually yesterday, but it was made very clear by Arians that, no, it's an open competition. Practice and preseason will determine what the situation is at running back. And Arians is saying, I love Keyshawn Vaughn on top of that. And it was interesting because we know it's so many other positions, there is no competition whatsoever. And that's why Arians brought back all 22 starters from a Super Bowl team. You don't do that if you're going to say there's competition at every position. So it was a unique kind of situation here. There is an open door at running back, and I love it because Rojo's in a contract year, and he knows the organization screwed him by not letting him get 1,000 yards so Antonio Brown could get some more money for his legal bills. And Fournette is in a contract year again, and Fournette's got all the confidence in the world. He's a playoff hero, and so they're going to go at it swinging.
You know, Steve, that's a little bit interesting to me, this the backfield situation, because – Lee, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I thought Arians went out of his way at various points last season. Various points. Up until the time Jones got hurt, I think he went out of his way to keep saying Jones is our number one guy. Jones is our number one guy.
Oh, yeah.
He was very consistent on that issue. And now, through no fault of his own, Jones getting hurt, and look, Fournette had a great January. I'm not knocking it. But I don't hear that Jones is our guy now. It's a little bit of a different tune from Arians.
Well, the reason why he was doing that last year, there's no doubt about it. We all know it. Jones had a self-confidence issue.
Right.
He would get down in the dumps and, you know, really easily. And you're starting to wonder, wait a minute, you got Fournette down in the dumps, you got Ronald Jones. This is why I'm thinking they drafted running back at 32. Whether it's Williams from North Carolina or Etienne, I've seen a lot of people thinking Etienne's going to slip down to 32. Fournette's here for 1 year. Maybe the Bucs are getting tired with all the work they're doing with Ronald Jones' attitude. They're going overboard to boost his morale. Well, this is a last year of his contract as well. And maybe they're saying, you know, maybe we'll just need a fresh start at running back. We'll get a lot of mileage out of these guys, provided we get Rojo's confidence up, provided we, you know, playoff Lenny performs the same level as last year. We'll do fine. We might need some fresh blood in here from a guy who can catch the ball as run the ball. I would not be shocked, and I'm not predicting this will happen. I'm just saying I would not be shocked that the Bucs have a brand new number one running back next year. When I say next year, I'm talking 2022, whether that's ETN, Javon Williams, Keyshawn Vaughn. It would not shock me if both Rojo and Playoff Lenny are playing somewhere else in 2022.
It could be the kid out of Alabama. Could be the Alabama.
Ooh, I don't know if he goes that far. I really don't. I've never seen anybody predict it. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
All right, Sage. Now, look, you guys were chatting before the podcast, and you think there's something important going on with the stadium that you wanted to mention. What do we need to know?
Well, I just thought it was interesting that, Ira, you chime in. You know more about the politics of this than anything. And here the Rays have been begging for a stadium. With all this stadium talk, and I think all three of us have talked on the side, not on your podcast, if the Rays got a stadium pretty soon, the Glazer family would start making some noise. And the way stadiums are these days, Raymond James is starting to get up there in years, starting to get old. And Joe Glazer went out of his way saying, no, the facility is fine. It might need to be upgraded here or there, but it's a fine stadium. We get a lot of compliments of it. And he goes, fan experience is more important than ever. And sometimes we might need to upgrade, but no, the stadium's fine. And I just thought that was very interesting, especially given how Stu Sternberg is begging for a stadium, but he needs one.
I got the same reaction that Lee had, Steve. I found it very refreshing that Joel Glazer at no point in his answer, when he was asked specifically about the age of Raymond James Stadium, in no way did he even hint that a new stadium was on the horizon or that he was interested in starting talks about one. I thought it was very refreshing. And to me, the main element of his answer was, we like what we have. It might need some refurbishing going forward. But there was no suggestion about a new facility. And I thought that was an outstanding answer by Glazer.
All right, Sage. Now, is this a little bit ironic that Mark Domenech was on SiriusXM NFL Radio late last week talking about how Jason Light's offseason is what he considers accomplishing the impossible, what they did to bring back all those players? And, you know, he rattled off the list of names and said, you know, if that was your goal, if that was on your big board before the start of free agency, yeah, good luck, pal. Good luck getting all those guys back with the salary cap. And they somehow pulled it off. And Domenech believes they didn't really mortgage that much of the future, which is what Joel Glazer echoed today, even though he admitted, yeah, we did a little here, a little there. I thought that was funny. But Domenech says that Jason Light, the man who came after him, accomplished the impossible.
Steve, are you referring to Mark 28 and 52, Domenech? Is that who you're referring to? Mark 28 and 52, Domenech, that's what I call him, because that was his record in 5 years. And I'm with Lee. It's a bottom-line business. You won 28 games in 5 years. You're out of a job. Sorry. I use the same formula for Light. You know, you didn't get the job done. You're out. Well, things have changed dramatically. Lee, I just feel that it's ironic any time Domenech weighs in on the current Buccaneer situation. And, you know, Light's the toast of the town right now, Lee. He can't do a damn thing wrong.
I find it a little bit amusing when someone mocks Domenech, who, Ira, if you listen to him on radio, is excellent on radio. And that's one of the reasons I referred to him as rock star, as the guy's made for TV, made for radio. When people say, why would I want to listen to Domenech? He had a rotten record. Okay. He was also a general manager. How many people do you know that are general managers and you get to listen to and they can tell you the ins and outs of an NFL team? Okay, he wasn't successful. By the way, the guys who are successful, they're employed. They're not looking for work. They're not looking for a radio gig. And the only ones that are ancient history almost. They're retired, like Polian, like Gil Brandt, although Gil Brandt wasn't a GM. Who was right. The guy that used to be the, you know, Michael Lombardi? Michael Lombardi's a star on podcasts, and he was a rotten general manager. What the hell did Amy Trask ever? She's eloquent. She's eloquent. She's excellent on TV. She's eloquent. And she, unlike 99.9% of the populace, was a general manager or a president of a team. I never traded for a pornographer like Dominic did Kellen Winslow. You know, I've never done a lot of these guys. I've never drafted a quarterback in the first round. I've never done all these things. And even if a guy failed at something, at least he could talk about the mechanisms of scouting. And maybe a guy learns from his mistakes. Maybe he doesn't. I can't rag on Dominic. He was not a good general manager, but he's not as bad as Amy Trask. And he's walked that path that I've never walked. And I think that's why people put those guys on radio. Number one, they're available. And number two, you know, they come at it with a modicum of experience where most people have never done that. Never for an NFL team, never been in the building, never scouted the college game, never scouted the pro game. So I can't totally dismiss guys like Dominic because of their record. Even Amy Trask. I learned things from Amy Trask, and you know, scary because her record was so horrible. But again, she's got experience, and I don't.
Well, Steve, you accomplished something of note today. You made Joel Glazer wince on a Zoom call. Outstanding. Outstanding.
He did, without mentioning Josh Freeman.
Sage, one thing Arian said when he was doing Chris Collinsworth podcast this week, he said that went back to that Falcons game when they were getting their ass kicked late in the season and they flipped the switch at halftime. And that's when he made the decision to just tell Brady attack, attack, attack from here forward in the whole season. And, told Leftwich we're taking a more attacking posture, call what you got to call. But he also said in there, which I hadn't heard before, he said JPP went wild at halftime, ripped on the team, and he said that's what a good veteran has to do. And you think about that, and it's sort of what they didn't have before. And, maybe JPP felt emboldened or late in the season or was a little more fiery than in past years, but I thought that was kind of meaningful when he said that's what a good veteran is supposed to do.
You know, I think that's a part of a JPP that doesn't maybe get enough pub. Lee is he is a fiery guy, competitive to his core. And let's not forget one thing, guys. And I don't think this is an overstatement. That first half at the Mercedes-Benz Dome or whatever they're calling that place, that was freaking atrocious.
You put it as high school football.
And I'm watching it over there at Big Storm with a bunch of Buck fans around me. We could not believe what the hell we were seeing. I mean, Matt Ryan had all day to survey the field in that first half. I'm surprised they didn't score 37 points. The Buck offense was AWOL. And that was a horrible half of football, gentlemen. And the Falcons stunk last year. It was kind of inexcusable, and then Brady went crazy. So I don't blame JPP. Lee, you were watching it from home. You probably couldn't believe how bad the Bucs looked that first half.
They were bad. In that same conversation, you said Brady was seething. He was so upset he could barely say anything. He was seething. And JPP went off one of them. The NFL Films clip of the Bucs season. I vividly remember, you know, when I heard Arians mention JPP, immediately I had a flashback to that video. It was against the Packers. I guess it was late in the fourth quarter. Packers are coming back on him. JPP's hollering as defensive teammates. I've been waiting 8 years to get back. You guys may never get there. It's now or never. And I thought of that. JPP must be much more of a the fiery leader, more than we think. By the way, Ira, I saw this quote, and I had to bring it to your attention. I emailed it to you. I think I even Twittered it to you. I don't know if you saw it. Where Bob Gibson on leadership, and he said, way too much is made upon chemistry and camaraderie. I don't need to love the guy sitting next to me. The guy I play next to, I need a guy who can play.
You know, they don't come any more fiery than Robert Gibson. Steve, don't tell me you got more topics to discuss on this podcast.
Ira, we got plenty to get to on our podcast later in the week, Sage. And you know what? I'm afraid after the day you've spent with baboons and all sorts of other animals, straight up afraid to ask you for some words of wisdom to close out the podcast. So I'm just not going to do it, but I will have a little fun, Ira, and say I appreciate to one of our readers who tweeted at you the subscription totals for your podcast at Podcast Addict, which I didn't realize had started posting their subscriber numbers. And Sage, very impressive. I think it was about 1,350 subscribers on Podcast Addict, which doubles anybody else in the market. And again, makes your pal Rick Stroud with his daily podcast look like he's standing in the woods holding a megaphone with nobody listening.
Steve, I can't believe there was somebody out there that knew about a metric that you didn't know about. Bits, you're supposed to know all these things, my friend, but you know what? I share it with my two compadres here on this podcast. I think it's the three of us, and the combination, Lee, the little spice between the three of us, that makes it. So I'm proud of what we're doing.
Well, it's all you, Ira. It's your podcast. People, they sure as heck don't listen to me. I'm serious. I really am. Ira, real quick here. Fans love this stuff. I love this stuff. We've been begging for the damn creamsicles to come back on a flashback day. We've been begging for, even Brady's taking to social media and is like, bring back the creamsicles. The Bucks can't unless they want to, because the NFL supposedly helps with concussions. There's one helmet and one helmet only. And I guess the creamsicles, it wouldn't do it justice if you wore the pewter helmets instead of the old white helmets with the creamsicles. So they won't bring the creamsicles back. And Joel Glazer admitted that he's been lobbying the NFL and Goodell to relax the one helmet rule so they can wear the creamsicles. Your thoughts, Ira?
Well, Lee, I'm going to shock you here. I'm going to shock you. I feel about the uniforms, Lee, the way you feel about Bruce Arians' tattoo. I don't care, DeKemper. I don't care. I don't care if they wear a priest's robe as long as they go and kick people's asses on Sunday afternoon. So how do you like that, Isbits? I don't care.
All right, Sage, I'm cutting you off. Fantastic podcast. As always, our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, your presenting sponsor, BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping there for a truck, a car, a Mustang, Roush, whatever you need. General Manager Sean Sullivan is ready for you, BillCurryFord.com. Big Storm Beer, they are the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast in great stores near you, and their tap rooms are in Clearwater, Odessa, Cape Coral, and Orlando, brand new in the Amway Center. Follow them at all their locations on Facebook, and our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration.
Florida's Elite Restoration.com.
They give you comfort because they are there for you 24/7. If you have any sort of disaster in your home, call them first. Water, mold, whatever it is, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. We thank all of our subscribers to the podcast, the many thousands of them. And we appreciate it. It just keeps rolling on, and we got a great season ahead, and we never stop. So much love to you guys, and we'll be back with another episode before you know it this week.
Everybody within the sound of my voice, you're all invited. Draft party, Big Storm Brewery, Clearwater, 49th Street, little south of Ulmerton. Be there.
Iris talking about April 29th, Thursday night, opening night of the NFL draft. It's our big party, big annual event that we've been talking about for a long time. More details coming at joebucksfan.com. But Big Storm is the host. Clearwater, 3,000 square foot covered outdoor area. Great viewing, great listening. And there's their beautiful indoor tap room, their A-plus menu. Everything's going to kick off about 7 o'clock. You come when you want, but we got a lot of fun stuff planned. Draft starts at 8. And the Bucks are probably going to be picking around midnight, so it's going to be a late night unless they trade up. Who knows? But it's always a great time. Big Storm is Florida's best craft beer, and they are the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast.